Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Professor Jennifer Curtin. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you today?
Kia ora, I'm good, thank you.
Nice to chat with you this morning. There's been a lot going on locally and overseas. Let's start with the National Party's announcement around their social investment policy. Now, this is basically something Bill English had introduced a long time ago, and we've seen a few updates, a few changes that make it specific to this National Party. What's your first take on it?
Well, I mean, I suppose the first thing is that there will be resistance from the left on this, because, like, the principles of social investment are to use data, to use analytics, to evaluate programs and work out what's not working, so that early intervention or early investment, if you like, in people's lives can help them in the longer term. So that's the sort of idea of it. But initially, when it started under English, it was really presented, perhaps unfortunately for the government then, as a, you know, fiscally necessary kind of program, rather than something that was primarily going to be about helping people over time to have, you know, better lives. And also, it really felt sometimes that there was sort of like profiling involved, mm-hmm. because the data that gets used is really micro level, and it sort of felt quite invasive and quite, you know, like dehumanising for those groups that got targeted as needing social investment. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sold or mm-hmm. organised particularly well. So, but, you know, in an ideal world, perhaps the principles are a good thing, and people argue that's essentially what the wellbeing approach of the current government is. But this version, you know, we know Nicola Willis has worked with Bill English, is a real admirer of his work. So we're sort of seeing a kickstart of an old program. But what they're adding this time is a social investment fund, where they're asking charities and philanthropists and possibly corporates, I don't know the details, mm-hmm. to put money into a fund to assist the government, you know, with their expertise and their money to do this work of socially investing in key programs that will help lift poor people out of poverty, for example, or, you know, putting better money into education programs for young people or something like that. So it's about the public getting together with private.
Now,
and
is that a problem? Is that weird? Yeah, is that weird? That feels weird. We spoke to Nicola yesterday, and, you know, she was saying, well, you know, there's a lot of people doing that philanthropic work and they want to be able to channel that energy. It feels patronising, perhaps. What's your take on it?
Well, you know, yes, philanthropists are doing a lot of this work and they're doing it well. So why would the state want to be the ones in charge of what philanthropists do? Like, quite often, charities and philanthropists are much closer to the ground, much closer to the communities that need that work and are, you know, an investment, and are doing that work. Therese Gattung and her sister have just announced a really big program that they want to, you know, put money into Māori Pacific young women to help, you know, socially, to invest in their well-being over time. They're doing that without having to put their money into a government pool. The government's, you know, like, the opposition is saying they want to use it to scale. But I just feel like, you know, this is a party that doesn't like centralisation.
Mm-hmm.
They want devolution, and wouldn't the communities that are already doing this work on the ground be better off getting government money, more government money into the programs that are already working?
Yeah, it's definitely been the bit that most people seem to have really picked up on as being quite a strange addition. We can come back to this, but let's talk a wee bit about this very interesting case that has been ruled this week. The courts have deemed Uber drivers to be employees in a landmark ruling. There's four Uber drivers from Pōneke who have won this case, and this is quite significant. Uber's obviously not very happy about it. What are you thinking about this?
Well, this, you know, when we're sort of holding our breath really to see if it will have flow-on effects. But it is a really important case, because what we've started to see, well, we've always known about precarious employment and casualisation, but this concept of the gig economy where, you know, and we even saw it in the movie industry, really, where yep. instead of being employees, people were treated as contractors
mm-hmm.
and self-employed. And when that happens, they don't get access to all sorts of rights like minimum wages, sick leave, holiday pay, KiwiSaver, you know, the opportunity to unionise. And so that sort of saves a bunch of money for those who are the companies. And these people are on these really fragile, if you like, employment contracts with no extra, you know, safety nets. And so these four brave workers have taken this with the support of two unions. And, you know, it is important, because that means it's not just Uber drivers, although Uber drivers are important,
mm-hmm.
You know, because there's a lot of them around. But there are a lot of people working in these really precarious roles that are sometimes, you know, the equivalent of zero contract, and then they're waiting for the call-up to get more work. And in between time, you know, are probably on the breadline. So I'm not sure how this is going to roll out, but it is an important first step, especially since Uber, as a company, has been lobbying and influencing really hard in Europe, for example, to just stop this kind of employment law being applied to their workers.
Totally. Well, it's very exciting to see. Let's look at the UK now. Rishi Sunak, new leader of the Conservative Party, new Prime Minister. God, it's been a bloody month for the UK. What is going on over there? What do you think about, I guess, what we've seen from his speeches and his early actions in this role?
Yeah, he's like, if we're talking about Conservative parties reinventing things from the past, you know, Sunak is, like, he's brand new in so many ways, like first British Asian, you know, he's youngest in 200 years, you know, his wife, he's very well off, well, he's extremely rich.
Multi-hundreds of millions, yeah.
Yes, very posh school, and his wife is a non-descent domiciliary for tax purposes, and he holds a US green card, so he's quite new in all sorts of ways. But he's also very Thatcher-like, so he's very committed to sound fiscal responsibility. So he hasn't said he's going to cut spending yet, but he has said that he's not committing himself to raising benefits for the poor at the moment, despite cost of living. And then he's got these sort of semi-green credentials that where people are watching. So he's reinstated the Conservative Party's fracking ban, which Liz Truss had removed, so people are pleased about that. And he wants to bring back integrity and accountability and financial stability. So he's really trying to distinguish himself from those 50 days of Truss. And he's not really mentioning too much about Boris Johnson, because he was Chancellor under Johnson, and so he doesn't want to sort of do too much messing of that period, because that could come back to bite him.
Do you think this is a wolf in sheep's clothing type of politicking that we're seeing from him?
Look, he's a conservative, and he's, you know, he's fiscally conservative. So he's going to be careful, and, you know, in the way he represents what he's going to want to do economically. But I wouldn't expect to see, you know, grandiose spending in any way whatsoever. And he keeps talking, as do a lot, that there are tough times ahead. It's just who those tough times are going to impact the most. So you know, I think people are sensible to have a healthy dose of scepticism.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be interesting to see how he manages politically with these, you know, hard economic decisions he's going to be making with his chancellor.
For sure. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Professor Jennifer Curtin. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Kia ora, thanks.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
Thanks very much.